tax cuts, which would in some formulation entirely eliminate the estate tax, and certainly that lowered the tax rates on people across the board, but particularly for people of great means. Those are going to expire, so Congress doesn't really need to do a thing. The revenue should theoretically increase just by letting those go by the way board.
In the meantime, we're just about to go to Chicago and the Hilton Towers on Michigan Avenue there, where President-elect Obama is expected to be making the announcements to his economic team and then taking questions from reporters. And, well, what we're hearing, in fact, is that the reporters have been divided up into two sections, the Cubs section and the and the White Sox section. This is we're having to talk about a new reality here in terms of the metaphors that this new administration will be applying, not just to its financial rescue packages, but also to how it divides up the media in these new circumstances. The president-elect, well, this is just his second news conference as president-elect, and John Itzde, thus far he's not been exactly prompt.
No, he hasn't. The last time he had a news conference, we waited, I think, almost a half an hour before he showed up. He's sort of harking back to the days of Bill Clinton, when Mr. Clinton also was a bit late in arriving.
These changes come with every new administration. 8 years ago, we were all surprised to learn that then President-elect George W. Bush had a habit of showing up early. For news conferences and other.
Which is even harder for us.
Even more difficult to deal with. In any case, President-elect Obama is now striding out onto the platform in Chicago. And in fact, those are his. The team that he is expected to announce today, some of the men and women who will be playing key parts in his administration. And he is starting to come out, so we expect President-elect Obama at the lectern in Chicago.
Have a seat. Thank you all for being here. The news this past week, including this morning's news about Citigroup, has made it even more clear that we are facing an economic crisis of historic proportions. Our financial markets are under stress. New home purchases in October were the lowest in half a century. Recently, more than 500,000 jobless claims were filed, the highest in 18 years. And if we do not act swiftly and boldly, most experts now believe that we could lose millions of jobs next year. While we can't underestimate the challenges that we face, we also can't underestimate our capacity to overcome them. To summon that spirit of determination and optimism that has always defined us, and to move forward in a new direction to create new jobs, reform our financial system, and fuel long-term economic growth. We know this won't be easy, and it won't happen overnight. We'll need to bring together the best minds in America to guide us, and that is what I've sought to do in assembling my economic team. I've sought leaders who could offer both sound judgment and fresh thinking, both a depth of experience and a wealth of bold new ideas, and most of all, who share my fundamental belief that we cannot have a thriving Wall Street without a thriving Main Street, that in this country we rise or fall as one nation, as one people. Today, Vice President-elect Biden and I are pleased to announce the nomination of four individuals who meet these criteria to lead our economic team. Timothy Geithner as Secretary of Treasury, Lawrence Summers as the Director of our National Economic Council, Christina Romer as Chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, and Melody Barnes as Director of the Domestic Policy Council. Having served in senior roles at Treasury, the IMF, and the New York Fed, Tim Geithner offers not just extensive experience shaping economic policy and managing financial markets. He also has an unparalleled understanding of our current economic crisis in all of its depth, complexity, and urgency. Tim will waste no time getting up to speed. He will start his first day on the job with a unique insight into the failures of today's markets and a clear vision of the steps we must take to revive them. The reality is that the economic crisis we face is no longer just an American crisis. It's a global crisis. And we will need to reach out to countries around the world to craft a global response. Tim's extensive international experience makes him uniquely suited to do that work. Growing up partly in Africa and having lived and worked throughout Asia, having served as Undersecretary of the Treasury for International Affairs, one of the many roles in the international arena, and having studied both Chinese and Japanese, Tim understands the language of today's international markets in more ways than one. Tim served with distinction under both Democrats and Republicans, and has a long history of working comfortably and as an honest broker on both sides of the aisle. With stellar performances and outstanding results at every stage of his career, Tim has earned the confidence and respect of business, financial, and community leaders, members of Congress, and political leaders around the world. And I know he will do so once again as America's next Treasury Secretary, the chief economic spokesman for my administration. Now, like Tim, Larry Summers also brings a singular combination of skill, intellect, and experience to the role he will play in our administration. As Undersecretary, Deputy Secretary, and then Secretary of the Treasury, Larry helped guide us through several major international financial crises and was a central architect of the policies that led to the longest economic expansion in American history, with record surpluses, rising family incomes, and more than 20 million new jobs. He also championed a range of measures, from tax credits to enhanced lending programs to consumer financial protections, that greatly benefited middle-income families. As a thought leader, Larry has urged us to confront the problems of income inequality and the middle-class squeeze, consistently arguing that the key to a strong economy is a strong, vibrant, growing middle class. This idea is at the core of my own economic philosophy and will be the foundation of all of my economic policies. And as one of the great economic minds of our time, Larry has earned a global reputation for being able to cut to the heart of the most complex and novel policy challenges. With respect to both our current financial crisis and other pressing economic issues of our time, his thinking, writing, and speaking have set the terms of the debate. I'm glad he will be by my side, playing the critical role of coordinating my administration's economic policy in the White House, and I will rely heavily on his advice as we navigate the uncharted waters of this economic crisis. As one of the most expert people in America on economic crises and how to solve them, my next nominee, Christina Romer, will bring a critically needed perspective to her work as chair of my Council of Economic Advisors. Christina is both a leading macroeconomist and a leading economic historian, perhaps best known for her work on America's recovery from the Great Depression and the robust economic expansion that followed. Since 2003, she's been co-director of the National Bureau of Economic Research Monetary Economics Program. She's also a member of the Bureau's Business Cycle Dating Committee, the body charged with officially determining whether a recession has started and ended, experience which will serve her well as she advises me on our current economic challenges. Christina has done groundbreaking research on many of the topics our administration will confront, from tax policy to fighting recessions. And her clear-eyed, independent analyses have received praise from both conservative and liberal thinkers alike. I look forward to her wise counsel in the White House. Finally, we know that rebuilding our economy will require action on a great variety of fronts, from education and health care to energy and social security. Without sound policies in these areas, we can neither enjoy sustained economic growth nor realize our full potential as a people. So I am extraordinarily pleased that Melody Barnes, one of the most respected policy experts in America, will serve as my director of the Domestic Policy Council, and that she will be working hand-in-hand with my economic policy team to chart a course to economic recovery. An integral part of that course will be health care reform, and she will work closely with my Secretary of Health and Human Services on that issue. As Executive Vice President for Policy at the Center of Center for American Progress, Melody directed a network of policy experts dedicated to finding solutions for struggling middle-class families. She also served as chief counsel to the great Senator Ted Kennedy on the Senate Judiciary Committee, working on issues ranging from crime to immigration to bankruptcy and fighting tirelessly to protect civil rights, women's rights, and religious freedom. Melody's brilliant legal mind and her long experience working to secure the liberties on which this nation was founded, as well as to secure the opportunities for those who've been left behind, make her a perfect fit for DPC director. I'm grateful that Tim, Larry, Christina, and Melody have accepted my nomination, and I am looking forward to working closely with them in the months ahead. That work starts today, because the truth is we do not have a minute to waste. Right now, our economy is trapped in a vicious cycle. The turmoil on Wall Street means a new round of belt tightening for families and businesses on Main Street. And as folks produce less and consume less, that just deepens the problems in our financial markets. These extraordinary stresses on our financial system require extraordinary policy responses. And my administration will honor the public commitments made by the current administration to address this crisis. Further, beyond any immediate actions we may take, we need a recovery plan for both Wall Street and Main Street, a plan that stabilizes our financial system and gets credit flowing again, while at the same time addressing our growing foreclosure crisis, helping our struggling auto industry, and creating and saving 2.5 million jobs. Jobs rebuilding our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, modernizing our schools, and creating the clean energy infrastructure of the 21st century. Because at this moment, we need to restore both confidence in the markets and restore confidence of middle-class families who find themselves working harder, earning less, and falling further and further behind. I've asked my economic team to develop recommendations for this plan and to consult with Congress, the current administration, and the Federal Reserve on immediate economic developments over the next 2 months. I've requested that they brief me on these matters on a daily basis, and in the coming weeks, I will provide the American people and the incoming Congress with an overview of their initial recommendations. It is my hope that the new Congress will begin work on an aggressive economic recovery plan when they convene in early January so that our administration can hit the ground running. With our economy in distress, we cannot hesitate and we cannot delay. Our families can't afford to keep on waiting and hoping for a solution. They can't afford to watch another month of unpaid bills pile up, another semester of tuition slip out of reach, another month where instead of saving for retirement, they're dipping into their savings just to get by. I want to repeat, this will not be easy. There are no shortcuts or quick fixes to this crisis, which has been many years in the making. And the economy is likely to get worse before it gets better. Full recovery will not happen immediately. And to make the investments we need, we'll have to scour our federal budget line by line and make meaningful cuts and sacrifices as well, something I'll be discussing further tomorrow. Despite all of this, I am hopeful about the future. I have full confidence in the wisdom and ingenuity of my economic team and in the hard work, courage, and sacrifice of the American people. Most of all, I believe deeply in the resilience and the spirit of this nation. I know we can work our way out of this crisis because we've done it before. And I know we will succeed once again if we put aside partisanship and politics and work together. That's exactly what I intend to do as President of the United States. With that, I'm happy to take a few questions, and I'm going to start with Beth.
The president-elect is asked about details of his stimulus package.
It is going to be of a size and scope that is necessary to get this economy back on track. I don't want to get into numbers right now. Part of the task of this economic team behind me is to help the details of that plan in consultation with Congress, the Federal Reserve, and businesses and thinkers across the country. But I think the most important thing to recognize is that we have a consensus, which is pretty rare, between conservative economists and liberal economists, that we need a big stimulus package that will jolt the economy back into shape and that is focused on the 2.5 million jobs that I intend to create during the first part of my administration. We have to put people back to work. Now, that runs in parallel with making sure that our financial system is stable, and so we're going to have to do more than one thing at a time. But across the board, people believe that this stimulus is critical, and the first job of my economic team is to shape that economic stimulus package so that it is delivering on the 2.5 million jobs that we talked about and is also providing a down payment on the long-term strategies we need in terms of making this economy work for all Americans. That means we have to invest in clean energy. We're going to have to invest in the systems in our in healthcare that can reduce costs for families and for businesses. It means that we're going to have to invest in the education system to ensure that we're competitive over the 21st century. So not only do I want this stimulus package to deal with the immediate crisis, I want it also to lay the groundwork for long-term sustained economic growth. Okay, let's go with Jeff. Go ahead.
And here's you being asked about tax cuts.
I said during the campaign that my plan represented a net tax cut, and that's important to remember. 95% of workers in this country would receive a net tax cut under my plan. Now, the reason that's important is not only is that good for families who are struggling, but it's also part and parcel of what we need when it comes to stimulus. We're going to be putting money into people's pockets so that they can spend on buying a new computer for their kids' school, so that they can make sure that they are able to deal with heat and groceries and all the other strains on family budgets. Now, what I've also said during the course of this campaign is we've got to restore some balance to our tax code. And the Bush tax cuts were disproportionately targeted towards the very wealthiest Americans. Those who are making more than $250,000 a year can afford to pay a little bit more. And it is important, if we're going to help pay for some of these expenditures that are absolutely necessary to get our economy back on track, that those who are in a position to pay a little bit more do so. Whether that's done through repeal or whether that's done because the Bush tax cuts are not renewed is something that my economic team will be providing me a recommendation on. But the basic principle is that we're going to provide tax cuts to the vast majority of Americans, the middle class that have been struggling over the last 8 years, that those who've benefited disproportionately over the last 8 years, the very wealthiest among us, will pay a little bit more in order for us to be able to invest in the economy and get it back on track. Okay? Kim Chipman, Bloomberg.
President-elect Barack Obama holding a news conference in Chicago to announce his economic plans and his economic team.
Kim Chipman, Bloomberg.
I'd like to ask a follow-up on the size of the stimulus package. Senator Schumer said yesterday up to $700 billion was needed. Today, investor Barton Big said as much as $1 trillion. Could you give taxpayers a range of the figure that you're thinking of?
I'm not going to discuss numbers right now, Kim, because I think it's important for my economic team to come back with a recommendation. But what I want to emphasize is that there is a consensus among across the political spectrum that we need a stimulus, and we have to make sure that the stimulus is significant enough that it really gives a jolt to the economy, that it is putting people back to work, that it is making investments, that it is restoring some confidence in the business community that, in fact, their products and services are going to have customers. And so we are going to do what's required to jolt this this economy back into shape. Now, it's going to be costly. And one of the things that we know already is that even if we did nothing further for the remainder of this year, that we're going to see a substantial deficit next year, bigger than we've seen in a very long time. And so I think American taxpayers are understandably concerned. If we already have a big deficit and now we're adding an additional stimulus, how are we going to pay for all that? The right answer is that we have to first focus on getting the economy back on track. We've got to first focus on making sure that we're creating those 2.5 million jobs. We've got to make sure that the investments are made to sustain economic growth over the long term. And then what we also have to do as part of this package, and this is going to be one of the major charges to my economic team, is that we reform how business is done in Washington and how the budgeting process works, how projects are done, so that we have a path towards a sustainable and responsible budget scenario down the line. So the way to think about it is short term, we've got to focus on boosting the economy and creating 2.5 million jobs. But part and parcel of that is a plan for a sustainable fiscal situation long term. And that's going to require some reforms in Washington. And I'm going to be discussing that more tomorrow. Okay? John from the Wall Street Journal.
Mr. President-elect, the current administration has been criticized in some quarters for taking an ad hoc approach to financial rescues. Can you describe how your new team's approach might differ from the approach that we've had for the last year?
I don't want to look backwards. I think that, as I said, we've had an unprecedented crisis. I mentioned in my 60 Minutes interview that I'm sure there are some things that didn't work exactly the way Secretary Paulson intended. He'd be the first to admit that. Some things have obviously helped in terms of stabilizing the financial system. But what I want to make sure is that moving forward, we are clearly articulating for the American people and the business community what our end goals are. Where are we going? What are we trying to achieve? And that there's clarity and transparency to our plan. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be adjustments over the course of weeks or months to respond to changing situations. But I think part of what we've seen is confusion on the part of the market sometimes in terms of what the overall direction might be. And we want to make sure that we're providing as much clarity as possible. The other point I would make is that even as we are doing whatever is required to stabilize the financial system, and I think that's a commitment that exists currently in the administration and is going to be a top priority for me during the transition as well as once I'm sworn in as president. Even as we focus on making sure that the financial system is stable, that we also recognize that a strong Main Street will reinforce and help a strong Wall Street, and that we can't separate those two things. And a working principle for me is going to be, are we looking at, for example, home foreclosures in a systematic way and addressing some of the struggles that are taking place outside of Wall Street, not only because it's good for working families, but also because it'll help stabilize the financial system. All right? David Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. President-elect. I was wondering if you saw the auto hearings last week. I wonder if you think the automakers made a convincing case for some kind of rescue package from Washington, and how do you want to see Congress proceed on that issue?
The auto industry historically has been the backbone of America's manufacturing base. And it's not just the auto industry. It's not just the big three. It's also all the suppliers, all the businesses that in one way or another are part of our auto industry that are at stake here. So I've said before, and I will repeat, we can't allow the auto industry simply to vanish. We've got to make sure that it is there and that the workers and suppliers and businesses that rely on the auto industry stay in business. What I also have said is that we can't just write a blank check to the auto industry. Taxpayers can't be expected to pony up more money for an auto industry that has been resistant to change. And I was surprised that they did not have a better thought out proposal when they arrived in Congress. I think Congress did the right thing, which is to say, you guys need to come up with a plan and come back before you're getting any taxpayer money. And my attitude is that we should help the auto industry, but what we should expect is that any additional money that we put into the auto industry, any help that we provide, is designed to assure a long-term sustainable auto industry and not just kicking the can down the road. Well, I think that the auto industry needs to present us with some clarity in terms of the dollar figures that they're talking about. But more importantly, are they describing for us an auto industry that is focused on retooling, understands that we're entering into a new energy economy that is going to be competitive globally? That's the kind of plan that the American people, I think, want to see. Nobody wants to see more job loss. I think Americans take great pride in the history of the American automobile industry. But taxpayers don't want to see more money wasted. So we need to see a plan, and when we see a plan, we're going to, be able to shape the kind of assistance package that makes sense. All right. I'm going to take one more question. Peter Slevin.
Yes, Mr. President-elect. How should the second half, how and when should the second half of the rescue money be spent? And are you personally having talks with Secretary Paulson and other members of the administration on that?
Well, I spoke with President Bush today. I spoke with Chairman Bernanke today. And let me repeat, we have to do whatever is required to keep the financial system working and capital flowing. That's not important just for the banks. It's important for our entire economy. It's important for small businesses and large businesses alike. It's important for their employees. It's important for retail sales. So my commitment is to do what's required so that our financial system works and credit flows. President Bush has indicated that he has the same approach, the same attitude. A lot of authority has already been provided to the administration, to Secretary Paulson. Chairman Bernanke has authority as well. And we need to make sure that that authority is used forcefully in the coming weeks to stabilize the current situation. I will make further assessments about whether it's necessary to draw down additional TARP money as the administration and Treasury Secretary Paulson and Bernanke provide me more real-time information. But I think what's most important for the American people to understand is that we are united in making sure that the financial system works and operates the way it needs to. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
President-elect Barack Obama announcing the members of his economic team and taking a few questions from reporters in Chicago. Today, as he heard, he said that we are facing an economic crisis of historic proportions. We need people with sound judgment and fresh thinking, people with skill, intellect, and experience, the best minds in the United States to guide us. And then he announced, as expected, Timothy Geithner as his proposed Secretary of the Treasury, Larry Summer, former Treasury Secretary, as the Director of the National Economic Council, Christina Romer as the Director of the Council of Economic Advisors, and then Melody Barnes, a bit of a surprise there, as the Director of the Domestic Policy Council. He was asked about the size of his proposed stimulus package. He declined to provide numbers, but said it needed to be big enough to provide a jolt to the economy, big enough to start on the 2.5 million jobs he proposes to create early in his administration. He was asked about tax policy and again declined to say whether the Bush tax cuts that he said were targeted toward the wealthy would be repealed or simply allowed to expire. He wanted word from his new economic team on that. He was asked about the auto industry and whether they would be bailed out. He said that The United States simply cannot allow the auto industry to vanish, but on the other hand, cannot write a blank check to an industry that has been resistant to change. He said he was surprised that the big three representatives in Washington last week did not present a better thought-out plan to Congress and agreed with Congress that they should not get any money until they came back with a better plan. With me here in the studio in Washington are NPR Washington senior editor Ron Elving and NPR economics correspondent John Itzde. First of all, John Itzde, the one name we did not expect was that of Melody Barnes.
Yeah, Melody Barnes as the head of the Domestic Policy Council. She'll be coordinating with the economic team. And since the economy is the top of the list and a germane subject for all domestic policy at this point, it seems appropriate. President-elect Obama mentioned health care specifically as he talked about her involvement with the economic team.
And Ron Elving, the president-elect, careful not to commit himself to any specifics, nevertheless talking about the seriousness of the problems that we face and his optimism that there are measures that can jolt the economy back into motion, as he put it.
He seems to be aware that the main contribution he can make at this point is not only to put a new team in place so that people can start looking to the future, but to express the calm that he was famous for during his long campaign for the presidency, to seem unperturbed by what are obviously deeply disturbing circumstances into which he's coming into the presidency, and also to communicate a sense of we're going to do this gradually, we're going to move as quickly as we can on a number of fronts. It's not going to all be solved overnight. We're not going to see this thing turned around, at least not in any substantial way, for a period of time. So buckle up. It's going to be a long ride. I'm putting together the best team that I possibly can, and we're going to proceed with judicious speed.
John?
Well, one thing that I noticed was that you didn't hear President-elect Obama say, again, that we have only one president at a time. He said the work starts today. And I think that's partly because what we've seen is when Secretary Paulson suggested that they were going to sort of close up shop on the TARP, the rescue plan, until the new administration came in, the markets didn't like that. And we've had basically an attack on Citigroup trying to force the government's hand to say, well, I thought you were going to stand behind this. Why are you closing up the TARP? That sort of thing. And the other thing I think that's interesting is that Tim Geithner, Treasury Secretary in waiting, but he's not sitting around on his hands. He's in the middle of this stuff right now.
As the director of the New York branch of the Fed.
Exactly. He was in the meetings last night on Citigroup. He's been in all the meetings of the rescue plan. And in a way, you have a Treasury Secretary in waiting who's already doing his job.
By the way, Wall Street up 330 points or thereabouts when this news conference began, now up 230 points. You can't read much into that. The market
right.
moves in mysterious ways. Many things influencing that. But, John, I wanted to ask you one thing regarding the stimulus package. President-elect Obama said, look, there may be disagreement on the numbers or exactly what's in it, but there is consensus that we need one and need a big one. Is he right about that?
He is right. Martin Feldstein, a conservative economist from Harvard, who served in the Reagan administration as Council of Economic Advisors chairman, behind a big stimulus package. I think across the board, people do believe it needs to be big, it needs to be quick, and it needs to be sustained.
And Ron Elving, very briefly, the president-elect said one of the things we are going to have to do is go through the federal budget line by line and look for, fraud and waste is everybody's thing, but nevertheless, sacrifice and cuts that are going to be painful, and he would have more about that tomorrow.
Yes, they always say that. They always say, but before we ask for any more sacrifice from the American people, we're going to go through the federal budget line by line. Well, if you cut things out of the federal budget line by line, that also involves sacrifice for the American people. It all depends on whether it's coming out of one pocket or the other. But it is one of those things you need to do. You need to say we're going to restrain government even before we ask people to restrain their own personal budgets.
And that's going to be on big-ticket items like Pentagon spending and the future of expensive weapons programs, that sort of thing. And nevertheless, there's going to be commitments until commitments in Afghanistan and Iraq that are going to be difficult to find any other way out of, certainly for the near future.
We're waiting to see, of course, if Robert Gates is asked to stay on as Secretary of Defense, which would in some ways be analogous to Tim Geithner making the transfer over from his current role in this administration to the Obama administration in a position of greater authority as Secretary of Treasury. If Bob Gates does that, of course, it remains in some sense George Bush's war into the beginning of Obama's presidency.
And John Itzty, some people might wonder whether the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, why wasn't that a replacement for him announced today? Of course, that's a position that's set up on a fixed term.
It's a fixed term that goes across administrations.
Deliberately,
and the term ends in 2010. There's some talk now that Larry Summers may be being set up to take over for Bernanke in 2010. We'll have to wait and see how that works out.
NPR's John Itzty, who is our economics correspondent with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much to you.
You're welcome.
NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving, also with us here in the studio, and we appreciate your contributions.
Good to be with you, Neil.
Of course, you should stay tuned to NPR News for further coverage and further developments as they warrant, as President-elect Barack Obama has announced the key members of his economic transition team. So stay tuned to NPR throughout the day for further developments and further explanations. I'm Neil Conan. This is NPR News in Washington.
And you are listening to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Good morning. I'm David Inge. We'll have some time here now until we turn things over to the staff of the Afternoon Magazine to open up the telephone lines. And I'm certainly interested in anything that you might have to say about where we are now with the economy and where we are now with the Obama administration, what will be the Obama administration and how it is coming together. A number of positions in the administration have been announced. And then there are a number that are yet to come. Obviously, he is concentrating here right at the moment on the economic crisis that we are facing and the people that will be responsible for dealing with that. So we're just going to throw things open, and whatever comments you might happen to have, they are welcome. And certainly if there are particular things you'd like to see us try to discuss on future programs, we can try to do that too. 333-9455 is the number here for Champaign-Urbana, just like always. And we do also have that toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. I do want to mention that the program that we had scheduled for this hour this morning has been rescheduled. We are planning on talking with Neil Ferguson. He's professor of history at Harvard and the author of a recently published book that actually is very timely. The title of his book is The Ascent of Money, A Financial History of the World. And what he does in this book is look back in world history and look at things like the creation of money, banking, stock markets, bond markets, real estate markets, the globalization of the economy. And, of course, he does indeed have something to say about where we are now. Interestingly enough, and some of the articles that I've read about him suggest that as long ago as 2 years, he was talking with people that were highly placed, prominent in the world financial structure, and was talking about the fact that we could have the kind of crisis that we're having now. And they all said, no, of course, that can't happen. Well, it turns out that it can and did. So I think that he will have some interesting things to say both about his book and about where we are now dealing with this now worldwide financial crisis. So Neil Ferguson will be talking with us about his book, The Ascent of Money, on December 10th at 11 o'clock. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And we're just throwing things open this morning. Anything that you might have to say on how it is we're responding, how it is the government is responding to the current financial crisis, anything about Obama, what will be the Obama administration as it is taking shape, whatever happens to be on your mind, we'd certainly be happy to hear from you. We have someone here ready to go to start us off in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I think we're extraordinarily lucky to have a man of intellect who will soon be at the helm instead of a man of ideology. And I think those of us in Champaign County Democratic Party who saw the scope and the intellect of Barack Obama when he ran for the Senate from Illinois. And, you know, we saw it then. He was a really great man, and indeed he has proven to be, just looking at his just how he organized his campaign, and of course what he says, the content of his intentions. And also, I was very fortunate to have gone to a luncheon to meet Michelle Obama, and I was very impressed with what she said. She said at the time that people, and this was way before the primary season, way before the primary season, and she said people were really looking to Barack Obama to solve an enormous number of problems. And her point was that he cannot do it alone. Each of us are going to have to be responsible in our personal decisions and in our personal interactions, how we are going to assist this country. And that was years, 2 years maybe, a year and a half before this crisis happened. Anyway, I think we're extraordinarily lucky to have a man of intellect, of his intellect, as president of the United States.
Well, just let me ask you a question, because you said that he was a man of intellect, not a man of ideology. Do you really think that Barack Obama doesn't have an ideology? Everyone have an ideology?
Yeah, but I don't think it takes center stage. I don't think he will do what George Bush did, which said, okay, we're having a tax cut, but we're going to give it to the people who make a lot of money, because after all, they are the people who start businesses going, and it will all trickle down to us. Well, I don't want anything trickling down to me, thank you very much. There are other ruder things that people have said about the trickle-down philosophy. So I think that Barack Obama's ideology is matched by his intellect. He knows and understands the financial circumstances far better than Bush. How we ever elected that man, I can't imagine. I certainly didn't vote for him. So, yes, I think, of course, he has an ideology. And I think that he's made it clear what it is. And I think, but he has the intellect to go about bringing that about without just doing knee-jerk reactions to things.
Well, thanks very much for the call. I appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
Other people are certainly welcome here. We have a little bit of time to fill. We just concluded with live coverage of a press conference from Chicago by the president-elect, Barack Obama, where he was announcing some of the people that would have the top positions, financial positions in his administration. And we'll have to deal with the financial crisis that we're facing. And then he took some questions, and now he's left us with a little bit of time. So I'm interested in anything that happens to be on your mind, your reaction to him, your reaction to his cabinet selections, your reaction to how he's responding to the financial crisis, any and all of that. And of course, as I mentioned, if there are particular things that you would like to see us or hear us try to discuss on the program, well, we always are happy to have those kinds of suggestions. 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Let us talk next with someone in Gibson City on line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
The only 2 points I'd want to make first was that I think Barack Obama is recreating a lot of the second half of the Clinton administration, which I think is a good thing, because that's a very successful administration, and I think he's really hitting the road running because of that. He's not bringing in cronies or anything. He's bringing in people who actually inside know what they're doing. And secondly, that one of the things that American economy people can do themselves is to start buying as much American as possible, particularly when it comes to the automobile industry. And, there's great cars made here in America. We don't need to be buying ones that are assembled here when the profits go overseas. We can buy American cars and help ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that kind of a challenge now, though, buying a car for example, you say you want to buy an American car, and some people would say, well, that means buying an American nameplate. The thing is, though, that there are American nameplates that are built, for example, that you can buy a Buick that was built in Canada. Now, how do you feel about, say, buying a Toyota that was built in the United States?
Well, I still think most of the parts will be made in the United States, even if they're assembled in Canada. Uh-huh. Of course, Chrysler's assembled in Mexico.
Right.
But But even then, our profits are not going overseas as much. You know, when you have Honda of America, which I think 6 years ago paid less than 1% income tax, you know, I think we're still better off buying, and hopefully maybe if we buy more of those, then more and more of the parts and assembly evens will return to the United States. But I think it's really one place where we've missed an opportunity to help ourselves over the years.
Sure. I'm just curious, you talked about how perhaps some of the people that are going to be involved in the Obama administration were part of the Clinton White House. I'm just curious what you think about Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. Any feelings about that one way or another?
Well, I'd rather had her as president.
Really?
But yes, I would have. But I think she'll do a fabulous job as Secretary of State. I mean, she brings such a wide birth of experience to the office. I think she'll be a great help to him, and I'm really, really glad to see that they've, you know, kind of closed the ranks there, because we're going to need everybody we can to get out of this mess.
Yeah.
And I think she'll do a great job.
All right. Well, I thank very much for your thoughts.
Thank you.
For other folks who are listening, again, we just have a little bit of time here, and about 6-7 minutes, we'll be turning things over to Celeste Quinn and the AFTMAG staff to take you on through the rest of the afternoon. But we had a little time here, and when we do that, when we have the opportunity, we open things up and say, well, tell us what's on your mind. What do you think about the place where we are? What it looks like the Obama people are going to do, and so forth. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. While I have the opportunity here, just do a quick mention of what we'll be doing tomorrow on the program, because our first hour guest is somebody who's very popular when he's here, and people want to know when he's going to be on the show, and that is Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive in Champaign, so it'll be your chance to call in and ask questions about your car. If you're having some kind of problem, all you need to do is tell us about it, say what kind of car it is, the make and the model, and describe the problem, and Rick will see if he can help you out. That's in hour one. Then in hour number two, we'll be looking back to the life of somebody who was an important figure in early America and in the American Revolution, and that is Samuel Adams. And our guest there will be Ira Stoll. He is vice president, managing editor of the New York Sun, and he has just now authored a new biography of Samuel Adams. So that will be tomorrow morning in the 11 o'clock hour. Let's talk again with some more folks here. We'll go next to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm not understanding, or maybe not hearing, why don't the automakers push for national health care? Seems to me that would be the smartest way to bail them out. They would not have to pay, as would other large businesses, if they didn't have to pay health care, they would, it'd be much easier to make their profit.
Well, that certainly is a very, for them, it is a huge expense. You're absolutely right. Why it is they, and it is, as you say, as far as I have heard, I don't think I have heard any of them say anything about that particular thing. And to be honest with you, I don't know. I think that's a good question. Do you, let me then just ask you, what do you think, though, of the idea of the federal government supplying some large amount of money to the automakers as they are requesting? What do you think?
It makes me nervous. Let's see. I think it was click and clack. trust their observations. They said something about why didn't they, the automakers, drive to Washington in a small compact hybrid and say, gee whiz, look at the good mileage we got.
Mm-hmm. It would have made a point. Instead, they probably took their corporate jets, right?
And then they made the point that they don't even have a small hybrid. They don't even make one.
Okay.
So that kind of gives you my thoughts.
They wouldn't have wanted to show up in a Prius. That probably would have been a bad, they probably wouldn't have been the right thing.
Bad form.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's my thought is, healthcare and, for heaven's sakes, adapt to what we need.
Well, that's what everybody is saying. And I guess what they are saying is that they think that they need a little bit of cushion and on the way to adapting, maybe they don't want to go out of business. So I don't know. I guess I'm sympathetic to the people who talk about just how bad it would be for the economy as a whole if one of these companies went out of business.
Right.
So I guess that's the big.
I hear that, but for decades they have been resisting the idea of making more fuel efficient cars. Decades.
Yeah.
And we've all been saying, you know, they needed to update, and we've all been saying we'll buy American made when it gets better. Gas mileage, et cetera. So that's my comment.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Uh-huh. We'll continue. Let's talk next with someone in Savoy. This is line two. Hello.
I will echo her comments. I was going to say that when the American car makers make a car that doesn't fall apart, has dealerships that are more respectful of people coming in, then maybe I'll go back to buying American. But the ones that I've had, we've had no end of problems with them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they might be better at this point, because my last car was a Mazda that I had well over 100,000 miles on with very few problems. And I realize that Mazda is made partially by Ford, so there's a combination there that's good. Mm-hmm. I just won't buy an American car just because of their record.
And I think that some people probably would say that the American auto industry are building better cars, but I think that what you're talking about, what you're pointing out there, is that people now, if they've got a bad feeling or if they've had a bad experience, they're not going to take a chance on a car. You know, they're going to say, well, I'm spending a lot of money here. So I'm going to go with what I think works best, and they're not going to take the chance.
No. Well, you can't take a chance. It's not like you're going to buy a dime thing, you know, or something for a dollar. You're spending big bucks on this, and you can't take a chance that it's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's my comment.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll try and get at least one more. We'll go to line three. This is somebody on cell phone. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
This is just sort of an off-the-cuff idea, so and probably a long shot. But and it looks like the new administration is hearing, you know, a lot of the concerns of the people, mostly because they've been forced to. But I wonder if Focus 580 has the ability to get maybe a low-level administration from the future administration as a guest. I know that that's a long shot, but it just popped into my head, and I thought, what the hell?
Well, we can always try, as I always say, and I think my producers would say, it doesn't hurt to make the call. Whether we could or not, you know, that's something else. But we can take a look at some of these people, and we could see what we could do. It's possible that at this point, I'm sure that they're very busy, but it's also possible that maybe this is the time they actually might be willing to do something like that. So we could see what we can do.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you. And I think maybe at this point we're going to have to finish up. My apologies. We have one more person here that we can't take because we're here just at the end of the time. But we're always interested in your thoughts and ideas about shows, and I'm certain that we will continue to talk about all of these issues for a long time to come. So otherwise, if you have thoughts about the program, you can send us an email, write us a letter, give us a call. We're certainly always interested in hearing from you. And just again, real quick, tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, speaking of cars, we'll be taking your questions on car care. Rick Karch will be here from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. And then hour two, we will talk with Ira Stahl. He's a managing editor of the New York Sun and author of a new biography of Samuel Adams. That is tomorrow. WILL programming here is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information available at 352-9713. That's it for us here for Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. Much more coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, one of my favorite guests will be back with us. His name is John Katz. He's a writer, photographer, and dog trainer. In his latest book, Izzy and Lenore, Two Dogs an unexpected journey in me. John Katz continues his examination of the rich and complex relationships between dogs and people. John Katz will join us following the 1 o'clock news. Let's turn our attention now to Kansas City and commodity prices in Kansas City. December wheat is trading at 569 and a half, up 36. March, 584 and a quarter, up 35 and three quarters. Now to Chicago, December wheat, 539, up 40. March, 555, up 37. December corn, 356, up 17 and a half. March, 373, up 18 and three quarters. May, 382, up 16 and a half. July, 394 and a quarter, up 18. January soybeans, 895 and a half, up 55 and a half. March, 902 and a half, up 55 and a quarter. May, 907 and a half, up 51 and three quarters. July, 914, up 50 and a quarter. December meal, 262.80, up 12.90. December oil, 32.95, up 2.25. At the Merck in Chicago, December live cattle, 86.40, up 150. February, 87.25, up 175. January feeder cattle, 91.10, up 170.